welcome to another episode of Detention. Obviously, I'm here with Hannah, so...
Hello.
You don't get an actual introduction, I'm sorry.
That's fine. I'm like a detention regular. I have been since I was 11.
Yeah. That's freaky that they had detention in primary school.
Oh, yeah. If there was a detention to be had, I had it.
Okay. That... You know, I think I got a lot of detentions, but I never went to them.
Yeah, that happened in high school. I didn't go to detention. I had like so many detentions because then you get like a lunchtime detention, then you get an after school detention if you didn't go to the lunch one. If you didn't go to the after school one, you got a weekend one. If you didn't go to that, you got suspended. But if you showed up to school anyway and didn't have the like, you go to the in school suspension, then you just got another like lunchtime detention. So by the end of the year, as long as you never went to like reap your punishment, it kind of reset at the end of the year.
Oh my God.
Which was cool.
I mean, it's like backwards couponing. Maybe.
I guess so. Like the hard thing about detention, I think that's the thing, is like the teachers never knew what the motivator was. Like, so for me, an in-school suspension or a detention, that was great because I didn't have anything else to do.
Yeah.
So I wasn't bummed.
Yeah.
Because if your friends are in detention.
Yeah.
That's like, just lunchtime in a classroom.
Yeah, literally. And you just like hang out and just sit there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, then like it's kind of cool because it's like, you know, prepares you for prison because it's like, what did you do? What did you do? It's like, I didn't wear my blazer.
That is, Jesus. Anyway, on today's episode, we are talking about JoJo Siwa.
Obviously.
The leap from detention to JoJo Siwa is clearly not.
Yeah, we're far. In our bad girl era, just like her.
Exactly. Sorry, I just keep wanting to say dream guest on my podcast. Like, you know how she's like, dream guest on my podcast.
Her voice is so good. I kind of love it.
Yeah, I kind of do too. It's a bit like Sophie Monk here.
I've loved it since Dance Moms.
Yeah. I never watched Dance Moms.
Oh, no, me neither. But my sister had it on constantly. So by osmosis, I watched all of it.
Okay, that's fair enough. But she's been doing some weird stuff. And, I this is the thing. I didn't know whether I wanted to talk about this because I didn't want to, like, shit on her.
Yeah, me neither.
And I don't really feel like I am, but I do want to talk about this in the context of, like, just pretty fucking weird, like, how this whole thing's gone down and just her behavior in front of a camera is just a little bit like odd.
You know, like it is, but it to me, I think it's like extremely relatable because it reminds me of every new lesbian.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know if you ever watched this, My Orthodox Life, I think it's called.
Wait.
It's a reality show on Netflix about Julia Hart, who fled an ultra-Orthodox Jewish community in New York and then went on to become, like, a fashion designer and runs the biggest model management company.
I need to watch it because it's never been explained to me like that.
So for me, of all the reality shows that exist, this is the only one that, apart from, like, you know, What's that one where all of the couples go and then swap partners to see?
Wife swap?
No, to see. Oh, yes, wife swap, but the lesbian one that was happening.
I didn't watch it.
You know, and it was kind of.
Queer. What's it called? Queer. No.
You know, and it had.
Oh, my God. What was it called? Everyone was going off about it.
I know.
What,
ultimatum.
Queer ultimatum.
Queer ultimatum. Obviously, I watched that. My unorthodox, my orthodox life. I'm going to just fact check that. Orthodox. My orthodox life. No, my unorthodox life. There we go.
My life.
I'll just hit myself out. You don't have to do a heavy-handed edit.
I don't edit these.
Oh, my good God. My unorthodox life. So, yeah, that's the show. But there's Miriam Hart, who is in that, the youngest daughter.
Mm.
She, you know, gets a girlfriend in one season and then becomes completely intolerable. So I do think there is this thing that as soon as you come out as a lesbian, you get, you know, to do all of the great things that lesbians get to do. Like, for example, have a girlfriend and, you know, tap into lesbian culture and identify with a whole community. And so I think that's really exciting, which just makes you a pain in the ass for like 3 years.
Yeah, but it's not so much that. It's like I'm not talking about like the queerness of what she's doing. I'm just talking about how she's like coming out and saying things that are just untrue. Like the whole like you know, making gay, I'm making a whole new genre, gay pop. And I'm like, well, no. And then also, if that wasn't already incorrect, like factually speaking, there's other layer of incorrectness with that is that she didn't even make the song that she's releasing. And it's like,
she did make the film clip.
Yeah. But obviously. The part that I'm confused about, I'm like, you want to be a pioneer of a genre. It's not even an original song. You've bought it off someone else, which is fine. That's
and it was
not
like a Miley off cut, wasn't it?
Yeah. It's not the problem. Buying songs, buying any part of music, that's not a problem. It's part of the industry and everyone does it. That's not the issue. The issue is that you're wanting to front as a pioneer. You're saying you're pioneering a new genre. And then on top of that, you're saying like, when I wrote the song, when I made the song, I was thinking, I'm like, babe, everything from the melody to the harmony, all the way through to the literal lyrics, like you just bought a song and produced it, which is again, fine, totally fine. But you can't then say you're pioneering a genre based on something that's not original, in my opinion.
Well, in my opinion, and just like the opinion of truth,
yes,
is that absolutely she did not pioneer a genre of gay pop music. And I think, you know, I was thinking about, do we get on TikTok to kind of like, you know, fact check this with the whole pipeline of, you know, gay pop artists that came before her. But then I didn't, because I was kind of, again, like, I know we're coming at it from different angles, but I do think that there is something where I want to give all young lesbians grace to be obnoxious, yeah, because she probably does think she's a pioneer because she's pioneering her own life. You know, that feeling where you're just like, oh my God, I'm gay and I'm like the only one and this is like this whole new thing and like everything that you touch or do just feels somehow like completely radical, even if, you know, maybe she should listen to Rainbow History Class a little bit more because she'd understand that it's not. But I do remember the idea of like, I'm just going to shop in the men's section because I'm gay,
yeah,
and I can, and I'm going to cut my hair, or I'm going to, you know, start flirting with women.
Yeah, I know. To be honest, I know I've never experienced that. I've just always been confused by the whole you shouldn't do that sort of thing. I'm like, yeah, what do you mean? I can't do this. And I never had like a defensive response to that I was never provoked to do anything other than just like continue to just make my own choices and just completely not understand the social impact of that.
Yeah. So, I feel like you were programmed, yeah, in a specific way and didn't, or had a self-assuredness that meant that you didn't need to kind of put on an identity that maybe, like, you know, going into a shop and buying something, but before you've had it tailored or anything like that, you're just kind of shoving yourself into the first thing that you like the look of before actually thinking, okay,
yeah,
does this fit me?
Yeah, I mean, personally, yeah, I never kind of really went through that part of the queer awakening journey of, like, figuring out what kind of gay I was, because, like, I was just, like, I've always kind of been like that queer person that's like, I literally cannot explain any part of my identity to you, so I'm just going to just fucking vibe it. And just that's, you know, why I feel like I'm a little bit of a chameleon, because that's just who I am. But in terms of JoJo Siwa, I do think that she is definitely going through something a la that one video where she looked like G-Flip. Again, I'm like, okay, cool. But like this whole completely reinvented, like, and this is the thing, like, I'm so confused about, did she have any, like, and this is, of course, maybe this is the answer to my questions, are like, she wants to be the pioneer of her own life, she doesn't want to have a team around her or whatever, but I do think that it's really interesting that if she hasn't been informed about hey, you know, like, okay, like, what's your direction, what's your messaging for like communications in terms of PR, she's just fucking wilding it out there. Like, she's literally just being like, I don't know how much you've seen, but she's like, I'm having my Miley moment. I'm having my wrecking ball.
Yeah.
But it's like when you look at the semiotic like semblance and visual expression of like Miley wrecking ball moment, it's like Miley went from like one very particular stereotype to having a very particular stereotype, which in some lenses can be seen as, I think, red is quite queer, to be really honest with you, especially with that haircut. Love it.
And those dogs.
And so, anyway, but when you look at JoJo, it's like someone's just inverted a fucking picture of her, which again is fine, but I'm like, I'm really wondering, I would love to see her creative journals. I would love to see like her Pinterest boards. Like, I'm not even joking. Like, I just want to understand her because I feel like what I'm lacking is a level of understanding.
Well, you know? I think what's interesting, though, is, like, two things. So, first of all, I can't think of a child star to adult star transition that's been successful that hasn't been janky, awkward, and had to go too hard. Like, I remember when Miley came out with Wrecking Ball and everyone was like, okay, this is way too much. What are you doing? Why are you licking that mallet? And to be fair, like now Miley's come back and been like, I know, but I think that's the only way to shake it off because I don't think, and this is something I'd like to see, but.
No, I can name two people.
Who?
Olivia Rodrigo and Sabrina Carpenter. They've just absolutely done a swan move out, just glacially.
I mean, I guess Olivia Rodrigo, I mean, they write their songs.
What do you mean? Yeah, both of them, they write their own music.
And I think that that just provides like an extra angle to help them kind of do it gracefully, whereas when you're doing the pop thing, like the manufactured, here's a song, here you go, it's almost like comes onto you as part of an image rather than something that's expressing what you're feeling.
Do you mean that like are you saying like, because I know that like both Sabrina and Olivia, they have always been singers and like kind of that three-part performer, but JoJo was a dancer. Like she is a dancer. Like she, I don't know if she can act. I mean, I guess that's the thing. When you look at what they're bringing as in terms of an entertainer, JoJo's only ever brought her dancing and her personality as more of like a host or like sort of like straight up. Whereas I guess, yeah.
When she didn't need to go into singing.
Yeah, like Olivia and Sabrina have always been like a singer, dancer, actor.
Well, so, and they write their songs and yeah. Their songs, they, I guess to me is more akin to like, you know, I don't want to bring up Taylor Swift, but essentially someone that's like, they've been able to communicate their journey based on what they're going through at the time. Yes. Billie Eilish would be another example of someone that's kind of managed to move from a teenager into adulthood very gracefully, but that's because of the songwriting that they do.
And I think as well, like, none of them have gone through like a visual identity change either.
Like they've just matured. Yeah,
they've just matured. Was I guess yeah, JoJo. But that's the thing,
because like, I mean, the other person would be Ariana Grande, who has made her adult vibe just the grown up version of her child star vibe, which is ultra cute.
Yeah,
like she, Ariana Grande has never shed the cuteness.
Yeah,
and that's so important to her, and that thinks why she's so successful. And then when you think about like her music, it's still kind of got that cuteness.
It's playful, yeah.
And playfulness. She's not, you know, it's very like thank you next. It's a bit sassy, but there's still something very tween about it, even though she's an adult and she's an incredible singer. Whereas I think, you know, the kind of emo-ness of Olivia Rodrigo has helped kind of gracefully put her into adulthood. Whereas when you look at someone like JoJo Siwa, it's just, you know, and because their images are managed, what I think could be an opportunity is there are so many people like image managers, people in PR that basically lead a child star's transition to an adult audience, but I'm not sure if there's a job for the same role when someone comes out.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, I think if there was like a PR representative or, you know, a PR industry that was all about kind of gracefully bringing, you know, I guess youth stars who then figure out their sexuality, helping them come out into the public in a way that isn't like JoJo Siwa. Like, it's quite clear to me that she didn't have anybody say, like, well, she said on her podcast, she's like, everyone didn't want her to do this, yeah. blah, blah, blah. So she's on her own. She funded her music video on her own because no one wanted to support her. And I feel like if there was a, you know, having a handler, an image manager, yeah. a stylist being like, hey, that's great. Like, you figured this thing out about yourself.
Yeah.
Like, my job now is to help you kind of connect
yeah.
with your queer side in a way that's going to make you land really softly mm. with that audience. But she was just, she's so young and she just had no choice but to, like, you know, toe the line
yeah.
or do what she did. And when you're like 20, but like your aesthetics are crap.
But like that's the thing, like I think about it like this way though. It's like you're so right, and like there is, like there should be people around JoJo that help her. And it's such a shame that like she had this experience where like she felt like that she had to do it on her own. Like that's just not how it should have been at all. I do like wonder though how she found herself, and this is, I'm not saying like, oh, it's her fault. This is not what I'm saying at all. But I do wonder how she found herself in a position where she didn't have any friends or colleagues that she, with a similar experience that she could maybe turn to and use their network of people they know or whatever to like kind of come in. Cause I know that like, for example, Sam Smith has like, you know, met, I know like other queer activists that have met Sam and have helped Sam and all that sort of stuff. And, you know, like things like that. I wonder like where that was for her.
Well, I think she would have been very guarded. And like when you look at that American dance mums kind of scene,
yeah.
it's just like you've grown up in that, you know, you've grown up in almost beauty pageant culture. Mm. It's so stereotypical. I can imagine that there's not much of a roadmap. It's not like she was alternative back then.
Yeah.
And this is where I do want to have some, okay, there is one criticism that I do want to make, not necessarily of JoJo, because I do think, you know, there just needs to be queer image curators for celebrities. But one thing that I do find really frustrating is this return of the palatable lesbian stereotype.
Yeah.
We're going through a new era of lesbian chic. Obviously, that was the real 90s kind of, you know, Madonna in leather, Angelina Jolie type kind yeah. of lesbian style. And I'm seeing this thing happen again now where, you know, JoJo was just sort of emulating G Flip.
Yeah.
And G Flip obviously is a very kind of particular one, you know, conventionally attractive person
yeah.
who is tapping into a very kind of classic lesbian kind of stylistic suite of semiotics. So backwards cap, leather jacket, there is a sense of kind of classic tude yeah. to that look, all the while being somebody who is very conventionally attractive, mm. very slim, able-bodied, and even though they're non-binary and, you know, I'm talking about, you know, everything outside of who they are as a person because mm. I do not know G Flip. I'm talking about, you know, what's kind of going around them. You know, they were
we have met them.
Well, yes.
Oh, no, I met them.
Yes, but I'm not, you know, I would hate to say that I know them beyond any kind of hi level. And I just think there is this thing, you know, they were brought in like that relationship with Chrishell.
Yeah.
You know, the reason that everybody loves it so much is because we've got this mask femme dynamic
yeah.
where the mask person is not inherently or visually mask at all.
Yeah.
It's Cara Delevingne and whoever she's dating at the moment. There is this, I guess you need to be thin and white, you know, there's a conventional attractiveness to you, and then you can eschew your gender norms.
Yeah, exactly.
And that's something that people like. And I think
that's what makes it attractive. It's not anything other than being thin, white, and able-bodied. Really, yeah. Again, like,
because if you look at, you know, what makes somebody like a lesbian sex symbol, it's kind of, you know, all right, you're wearing ripped jeans, you're wearing a leather shirt, you're wearing, you know, a white tank top and you've got a backwards hat on. And that's the same as, you know, Avery, who Jojo Siwa dated.
Yeah.
Again, you've got that one look, but we need to be looking at, you know, are we attracted to this person because they're like, you know, eschewing gender norms, or are we attracted to this person because it doesn't matter what they're wearing, they're still going to be attractive. Yeah.
But that's the thing as well. I feel like, and we've got to wrap this up in a second, but, the thing as well that I'm finding with this resurgence, or I guess reiteration of like a lesbian chic in it's, I don't know what the name of it right now would be called, lesbian casual Fridays or something. But it's like there are a portion of these prominent figures who are not actually, I don't identify with lesbian as a sexuality label. They identify with lesbian as like a visual expression or a culture, like a society, like a cultural exchange of information almost. And they'll say, like, they'll use the word lesbian when they're in a relationship with a woman, which is totally fine. Like, if you like, use whatever words you want, but I find that like it's compressing our understanding of gender expression and sexuality expression and dynamics. And also in a way, and this is maybe a leap, and I, again, like, we don't have time to unpack it, but food for thought. In my mind, it is a little bit erasive of bisexuality or other like sexualities.
Yeah, I think there is that fetishization. When fetishization of like lesbianism comes up, it is by nature inherently, you know, erasing of bi experiences, just because it becomes that shorthand word that gets applied to all non-normative sexualities, non-heteronormative sexualities. I guess what's interesting from what I picked up from what you said is that, you know, when we're talking about lesbians and like what gay pop is and stuff, you know, we're spending so much time talking about sexuality, perhaps we should be talking about gender.
Yeah, because it seems to me more about gender than it is about sexuality.
Yeah, there is kind of a set of it's a gender expression thrust upon a people who identify as a lesbian, not because of what they like to wear, but because of who they like to date.
Yeah. It's very interesting, very complex, isn't it?
But we could probably do a whole ep on lesbian chic and
talk about it.
Jojo Siwa. Yeah. Maybe we will.
But that's all that I'm not editing that out. That's just staying in there. Sorry, folks. But that's all we have time for in today's episode of Detention. I feel like
I love detention.
We drilled down there and I didn't expect that to happen, but I'm glad it did. I thought, you know, I'm glad and I hope if you've watched it all the way through, you understand. I never like to come across as if I'm like shitting on someone. But all I wish for, actually, I just want to talk to her. To be really, I just want to have a conversation with her. Like, I don't, you know what I mean? I just want to talk to her about it because I'm really interested in what's going on for her. And I kind of just want to help her. I don't know, that sounds a bit weird, but I just want to like be there for her.
I'm thinking about transitioning careers into becoming a coming out image manager for former child stars.
That is so interesting, but I feel like there would be a large clientele.
Yeah, well, yeah. I'm a hard worker. Come at me.
All right, well, thanks again for watching. And, yeah, we'll be back soon with another episode.